sweat the technique.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. Lassiter's fit with the Houston Texans. What will it be? Some of the Texans are mad at us, I guess. 2662, there's a handful of elite corners that have 4.5 speed and slower. I do think 40 times are extremely overrated. 0511, y'all put too much into the underwear Olympics. I also think he has a chance to be an outside corner. 8815, just turned y'all on, and I cannot listen to the second guessing and negativity about the draft. He doesn't want some truth. Sometimes you got to get the truth. He doesn't want it, I guess.
Maybe we're putting too much into a 40 time, but everyone that we've heard, whether it be Lance or Casario, like D'Amico, all of them are brought up like, yeah, he's, you know, speed is not like his strong suit. So it's not like we're making something up. Like this is a concern they decided they're okay with, not something that doesn't exist.
I mean, Casario was literally on the defensive before anybody could get to it. He attacked right away and went on the defensive to say, I'm sure you guys want to bring up the speed.
Now, Casario doesn't care about a 40 time at the combine. He's going to look at GPS tracking, how fast they run in real college football games against SEC competition. And he said that Lassiter wasn't slow. That's what he said. He said he wasn't slow. He said, keep up. Ocho, there's no way Nick can convince me that any of the Texans draft picks will provide more value than A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Legette, or Brian Thomas Jr.
Well, hold on. I mean... I mean, one of those guys, Brian Thomas Jr., you're trading up a long ways to get Brian Thomas Jr.
Where did he end up going? He went to Jacksonville at 22?
I believe so, yeah. I mean, that feels undoable, that far of a jump up.
Not if you don't make the trade with Minnesota.
Not, okay, sure.
But once you did that, no, he went 23, so it would have been your pick. So that's what he's referring to. He said he's basically saying not to make that trade.
I mean, I guess you can make the argument, would you rather have Diggs or Brian Mitchell? But
it wouldn't be only that. It would be, would you rather have Diggs and Lassiter or Brian Thomas?
Sure.
1 year of Diggs. What would you rather have?
But once the deal has been done, we can't go back and now. There's no way. I don't think the Texans could have got there.
There's you can say that you can never have wanted the trade.
Yeah, that's fine. That. I guess I took Ocho's comments differently, as in that Casario should have traded up during this draft over the weekend once that trade had already been done. And on the other two players, I mean, look, there's going to be a range of opinions on those guys with Legette and A.D. Mitchell. I was kind of out on both. Legette, I mean, I know his last year at South Carolina was amazing. His numbers were amazing. But go look at his first 4 years, under 200 yards each of his first 4 years. I'm sorry. I'm not going to buy into anybody breaking out in a fifth year, some 24-year-old going up against 18 and 19-year-olds. I don't buy that at all. A.D. Mitchell, and this is coming from a Longhorns fan, I never saw him dominate. I think he's a good red zone player. I don't care about the nonsense that came out as diabetes. I never saw him dominate at Georgia. He was never the go-to guy, and he wasn't the go-to guy at Texas. I'm not spending that high of a pick on a wide receiver when he was never the guy at his school.
At what point did J.J. Watt become the guy at Wisconsin?
J.J. Watt was...
He never really had a great year. His sophomore year was okay, 4.5 sacks, and then his final year he had 7 sacks.
His junior year is when he got on everybody took notice
of him. That was his last year.
Yeah, so the junior year was the year that everybody started to pay attention to him. Because remember, he started out at like Western Michigan. Central Michigan.
Antonio
tight
Brown.
End.
A directional Michigan. Yeah, he was Antonio Brown.
Like why can Watt hit it big, but Legette can't?
I look at it a little bit differently because with wide receiver, I think skill brings targets, brings involvement in the offense. And if an offense is looking at you and deciding not to give you targets, not to get you involved in the scheme, then they don't value your talent as much as the other players. And I think that's a telling sign when you're trying to transition to the next level.
Fair enough. 713-780-ESPN. Maybe the most curious pick was the Texans taking Blake Fisher in the second round, pick number 59. This was their second round pick. Here is Nick Casario's assessment on Blake Fisher.
Good football player. Started his career at left tackle. Moved over there to right tackle when, you know, moved to left tackle. So I think we've always been a big believer you can't have enough tackles on your football team. So when you look at kind of over the last however many years, you know, whether it's Charlie Heck, whether it's George Fant, whether it's Jones. So, I mean, Titus and LT are good football players. You need three tackles, three or four tackles that you feel can go out there and play. I'd say in Blake's case, 6'5", 6'5 and a half, 315 pounds, long arms, plays strong, plays physical, played against good competition, well coached. I'm the offensive line coach, former offensive line coach at the University of Wisconsin. So play with JP. So, I think our program will benefit him, but you can't have enough tackles in your building.
So whenever we were doing our put our feet in Nick Caserio's shoes, we were eliminating tackle.
Mm-hmm.
You see Blake Fisher at the pick at number 59. What is going through your mind, and how are the Texans going to use Blake Fisher?
He's going to be a guy that is going to be the eventual replacement for either Laremy Tunsil or Howard. And in the meantime, he is going to be a guy that gives you positional flexibility to cover for the fact that both guys have been injured frequently or less than ideally in the last couple of seasons. And he's providing more depth for this roster yet again. In the short term, he's a backup with a chance to play a little bit. And if an injury happens, you've got a guy on the roster that's going to be working towards being able to do that. And in the next year or two, he's going to be a guy that succeeds one of those two guys.
Yeah, he's not, in my mind, positional flexibility, because Caserio said he's a tackle. And Fisher was asked,
just right tackle or left tackle as opposed to playing guard.
Yeah, if you look at positional flexibility, you're talking about, tackle guard can play both. Like Titus has a little bit of positional flexibility. And even Titus, I don't really love his positional flexibility because he's not a very good guard. I was sarcastic whenever they made this pick that they're going to move Titus Howard to left guard. I don't really believe that they're going to move Titus Howard to left guard. But Caserio was asked about, can he play inside? And Caserio's like, not really. He's more of a tackle. Fisher and his media availability, too, he's like, I've never played inside. He's like, I'm willing to do it, but I've never played inside. So the Texans, they drafted a tackle. This isn't some, Fisher can move to guard. This isn't some, Titus Howard can play left guard, because I think that they view Titus Howard as a right tackle. And Caserio also said that Titus Howard's better outside than he is inside. I'm with you. I think that Fisher is not going to start unless there's injuries. Fisher's not going to beat out Laremy Tunsil. Fisher's not going to beat out Titus Howard. This is Blake Fisher eventually being the replacement for one of those guys, probably Titus Howard, not Laremy Tunsil. But I don't think Fisher is going to be somebody who ever plays inside.
No, when you look at watching the draft as it unfolded and some of the guys that were commenting on, they said if he was encouraged to stay at Notre Dame, if he did, he might have been a first-round pick next year. I think that lets you know that this is a guy that's going to be more of a project that they're gonna prepare for as an insurance policy this year, but in the next year or so, he's going to end up taking one of the jobs or will end up succeeding one of the two tackles.
Yeah, what do you think about this, Brian?
I think the odds are that you guys are correct. They didn't have a third tackle, really. There have been guys they could have put there, but I don't think there had been anybody at the third tackle of Tunsil or Howard went down that you would have been...
They brought back Heck.
They brought back Heck, but my point is, would you be happy or excited if either Howard or Laremy goes down and all of a sudden you're stuck with Charlie Heck?
So, I'd be like, oh, Heck.
Yeah, well, great joke.
I didn't do it, but...
Great the joke there. 4.2. I don't think you have anybody that you're happy with, so you have to draft somebody that can be that third tackle. And also, I'm not going to dismiss the idea that, hey, they're looking at left guard, Kenyon Green, Jarrett Patterson, whoever they are penciling in right now and thinking, okay, we're penciling him in. We want Titus Howard at right tackle. That is his best position, but we at least now have an option to where if the left guard suck in camp, we can move Titus in, and now we've got this guy that we drafted in the second round that could go play right tackle.
So more likely now that Titus Howard can play some left guard in 2024.
I think so.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, that's not, and obviously he doesn't want that based on his Twitter account. But no, I don't think we want that either. That would be less than ideal.
They just don't have much of a plan right now at left guard.
Unless they think higher of Kenyon Green than we do.
Right.
Believing
in Kenyon Green, who hasn't played football in a year, as your starter at left guard is terrifying. And if Kenyon Green can't get it done, I guess Jarrett Patterson,
Kendrick Green as well. That's not great.
Right.
Those aren't great options.
I guess they've got, whether it be Kendrick Green, as you mentioned, or Jarrett Patterson, or hell, even moving Juice Scruggs, over to left guard. They've got other options, but I think they might lean to, especially if Blake Fisher has a good camp, they might lean to moving Kendrick Green, or not Kenyon, sorry, Titus Howard inside.
Playing
Blake Fisher.
People would lose their
right
minds.
Yeah.
People would lose their minds again if Titus Howard's left guard. Can I tell you who I wanted with this pick? I wanted Cooper Beebe. I wanted Cooper Beebe with this pick because he's immediately your left guard, and he's probably immediately your left guard for 10 years.
That's his natural position, so.
I wanted Beebe with this pick. I am intrigued by the upside of Fisher, though, because I would concede that Fisher has a higher upside than Beebe does. Beebe's floor is much higher, and it's more of a positional need, so it sounds like I'm being a hypocrite because I do like best player available. Fisher's upside does intrigue me, but Beebe would have probably been my selection here. I think he's an instant fit. Dallas ended up drafting him. They're going to move him to center, I was reading. I think it's a great pick. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line real quick. Vera, you're in the hive of the bees. What's up, Vera?
Hey, guys, I appreciate you letting me call in. I think there's a couple of things, right? I think Titus Howard, he's been a productive player. I wouldn't say great, but his health has also been a concern. He has missed a few games. I mean, if it weren't for George Fant last year, we would have had a real problem at our right tackle, right? I think we didn't really miss Titus Howard. And with George Fant basically going back to the Seahawks, there was a spot for a swing tackle that needed to be fixed. And this is that pick with Blake Fisher. You know, it's nice to see for a draft where we are not like drafting players just to fill necessarily positions of need immediately, but it is building up that bench strength, if that's what you can call it, the backup strength behind the starters. But I look, just reading his draft profile, Blake Fisher, I mean, they said, look, Joe Alt was much more consistent, and he got drafted where he got drafted. But just the athletic profile of Blake Fisher was much more natural to be a tackle. I mean, he did start one game at left tackle before he moved over to the right tackle at Ohio State. So when you are starting right tackle for 26 games for a top school, that does say something. So my gut feel is, you know, not this year, but probably by 2025, there's a reasonable chance he could beat out Titus for a starting spot, right? But we'll have to see how that pans out. I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on it. I'll hang up and listen.
Appreciate it, Vera. He said 2025.
Yeah, he did.
Just pulled up Titus Howard real quick. Is over the cap. If you designate Titus Howard for a post June 1 cut next year, not this year. Let's not get crazy. It can save you $14 million.
That feels...
And Titus felt like you overpaid him a little bit whenever you overpaid him.
Oh, yeah.
And like Vera's point, like he is banged up a little bit. He likes to play video games a lot. Like that doesn't really get the whole like we love football type of guy. They can save $14 million if they designate him for a post June 1st cut next year.
I thought you were going to say that it would screw him if they tried to get out of it.
No, I mean, the whole designate June 1st, you can make this designation like at the beginning of the offseason, but it could save you $14 million.
I think there's a chance that this could be a play for your spot on this roster season for Titus Howard.
I'm with you.
Because, I mean, I think he's obviously played well at times. He wouldn't have become the starter there if he hadn't. But I think at times we've maybe allowed reputation to cloud our judgment. I mean, he's been hurt. I don't think he's played, obviously didn't play well at left guard. This could be a spot where, hey, let's draft our third tackle. But Titus, if we don't see what we paid you for, then we're going to move on.
It might be a fire under the butt of two offensive linemen going into camp then, because we all know that Kenyon Green, this is it for him. And if you're doing the same thing to Titus Howard, it's basically saying, hey, look, we took care of you. You haven't really taken care of the position that we needed you for. Yes, you've been versatile. You've been willing to bounce around, but you got to put up a little bit this year.
And really, Titus has more competition than Kenyon Green, at least more high-end competition than Kenyon Green, because they drafted the guy in the second round. Yes or no, Blake Fisher will be the starting right tackle in 2025?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm with you guys. I'm yes as well. And if you're drafting your starting right tackle in his second year, I think it's a good pick in the second round.
Yeah.
I think it's a good pick in the second
round. Yeah, if you get a starter next year out of this, then you've certainly done well with the second round pick.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's talk about the rest of the draft and also the best of Cal McNair during the draft. We got to get some Cal McNair sound. We love when Cal McNair speaks. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. We talk about pet peeves on this show all the time. You know what one of my big pet peeves is? Potholes. I can't stand them. That's why I love Third Rock Renewables, amongst many things. They're on a campaign to fix potholes for good, or just lay down a good parking lot or a good road. They're fantastic at all of those things. We've all been there. Potholes pop up. We throw some money at it to fix it, and it turns out it's just a temporary fix, a Band-Aid. That annoying pothole pops up again in a few weeks or a few months. change that and get in touch with Third Rock Renewables today. Or if you're looking for a parking lot or a country road, wherever you're going to put a little bit of concrete asphalt, don't do that. Get Third Rock Renewables. It's going to save you money. Third Rock Renewables is a patented technology called mechanical concrete. It turns these old end-of-life tires into an indestructible building product. It's the only low-cost industrial strength sustainable in the market. This mechanical concrete will fix the potholes for good. It'll give you a good lay-down yard, a good lay-down lot. It'll give you a good road, whatever the case may be, and we can eliminate all these pet peeves from our life. Potholes, bad parking lots, bad roads. Visit them online at thirdrockrenewables.com or call 713-305-0507 and get some mechanical concrete today.
Now back to the Killer Bees.
What's he saying about bees?
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I don't know. He said he was, like, protecting the hive.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your resident beekeepers, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Sadly, Jason Statham was unavailable.
I'm a beekeeper.
We've got a featured restaurant to highlight this week, Highway Cantina in Edo, Chili Con Queso.
I'm glad I wasn't the only one to notice that.
Chili Con Queso. A great Tex-Mex destination before and after ball games, and certainly for Cinco de Mayo, thanks to Highway Cantina, our featured restaurant this week. Delicious food. Great spot. Park there before the games. You can go watch the games, pregame, postgame, all of that. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. 9202 says they said Mills would have been a first if he stayed. Can we believe that? I called BS on this from the start. I thought it was silly. I think it was McShay that said it. Like, if he would have stayed another year, it would have been a first. No, he wouldn't have.
Yeah, there were. Was it just McShay that said it?
I thought there were multiples. He was the first one I heard it from, I think. It's been some years now. I forget.
I mean, it's tough now because of what we've seen and what we know. But, yeah, I don't know how that guy would have been a first-round pick unless there would have been a really, really weak class.
Yeah. Here was Cal McNair. Cal McNair, now, the Texans were smart, and they only used him once for sound bites, which was very disappointing to me. I went back and I combed through 2 hours' worth of sound from Houston Texans draft weekend earlier this morning, hoping to get more than one Cal McNair cut. But we only got one Cal McNair cut. Here was the best and only. Cal McNair during the NFL draft calling a prospect. I think it was Blake Fisher. He called Blake Fisher after he was selected.
Big part. Hey, Blake, congratulations.
Big part.
You got all your family there? Everybody's cheering? All right. Well, we can't wait to get you here. Make you a Texan.
He's so lucky. He's got a good life.
What's the appetizer platter look like?
Are you guys excited? Yeah. Yeah, Cal, they're excited. He just had a lifelong dream come to fruition. Yes, he's excited.
Did you guys make the food? DoorDash? How'd the food get there?
Hey, you guys got a grill? Because if you don't, I make some mean burgers during camp. You'll have to try mine.
Is everybody there? He asked him, is everybody there and is everybody excited?
Oh, no.
Those were his two questions to a guy. Is everybody there? Are you excited? Yes, Cal, everybody's here. And yes, Cal, we are all very excited.
He's so dull.
He's so a buffoon. Dull. I love Cal McNair. He's a buffoon.
He ain't dull. He's more the latter.
I wish we had audio of him calling every single one of these players. There's a reason they only put one. Let's call it what it is. Because you know he talked to all of them just like, because he's in the room, you can see him in the video. He talked to all of them just like Casario talked to all of them, just like D'Amico talked to all of them. He talked to all of them. But they gave us one. They know what they're doing.
No question.
They know what they're doing.
Smart branding.
I wish they gave us all. How many did the Texans end up with? 249 players? I wish they would have given us all of them. We would have played every single one of Cal McNair talking to every single prospect that the Houston Texans drafted because it's the best audio cut we're going to play all day.
People would have known his shoe size for how many times you could see foot in mouth. Like, I mean, I'm sure that it would just be a mixtape of missteps.
If they had given us nine
of those calls, you know what they would have sounded like?
That.
The one we just aired.
Yes.
So we already did air all nine. We did air all
Brian,
nine.
Brian, this was the best of the nine. I know. This is the one that they chose. So this was the best. Let's play it again. Here was Cal McNair after they make Blake Fisher their second round pick, fulfill a lifetime dream. And here was the owner of the Houston Texans talking to Blake Fisher.
Big part. Hey, Blake, congratulations.
Big part.
You got all your family there? Everybody's cheering.
Everybody's cheering.
All right. Well, we can't wait to get you here. Make you a Texan.
Everybody's cheering. Can't wait to have you.
He really asked
I love Cal.
Is your family there? Are they cheering?
Is your family there?
And are they cheering?
My goodness.
What
he is a national treasure. I love coming there. I love that. I love that. And I love that we're not on Highway to Hell so we can play this and have fun with it and talk about how big a buffoon he is because it's hilarious.
Yeah,
because
if we're in the Highway to Hell, they would come on the next week and call us out. Well, Hannah would because Cal is not really capable of coming.
I'm a little surprised we didn't get one Hannah.
Yeah, she wasn't in the room. I think she was in the room, but they don't show her on the videos.
But she's not technically the owner, so
right,
I
doesn't
get it.
Matter.
I'm
but
not
she's
surprised.
Been the voice of reason from ownership.
Yeah,
that people
she's the branding
gravitate towards.
I think Cal's still got to make the call.
Yeah, I do too. She's definitely the puppeteer, but she's not. I don't think she's making the call. She still tries to nudge Cal to the forefront. She's a good wife. I think she's a great wife.
I would
think,
but to that point, I would think they do pretty much everything together now. And she kind of jumps in with some intelligent interjections to where,
maybe they
hey,
start
this,
making
is,
these
this is Cal
calls.
And Hannah McNair. Welcome to the Texans.
She tries really hard, though, not to belittle him, though, and still make him the owner.
And you have to try
Texans.
Hard to do that.
Yeah, so that's why I'm not surprised by that. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Travis, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Travis?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
What's up, man?
Man, when are the Texans going to actually move up and get something? I mean, two of the past 3 years, 2 years ago, we needed a running back. Everybody knew we needed a running back. Breece Hall falls to the second round. We were the second pick, and guess what? The Jets come up and take him. On Friday, we needed a quarterback. Everybody knew we needed a quarterback. DeJean and Kool-Aid fall two picks to us. And it's like Dikembe Mutombo shaking his finger. Philadelphia and New Orleans both jump up and take both of those studs. Well, when are the Texans going to say, okay, you know what? The guy's falling. We can get him. Let's move up and get him. Well, I'll hear what you have to say.
Appreciate it, Travis.
Travis, look, appreciate the call. I don't know that you can have that kind of a harsh look at this when you think about all that they did to improve this football team leading up to the draft. I think that, you know, you heard Nick Caserio's comments. I think everybody, you know, they have tiers for different players. They have, you know, they have an outlook on what they were looking for. I don't think they were looking for, you know, starters on the defense like it sounds like you were in some of the positions. I think that they know that there's still guys out there, even if they want to go get another corner that are on the street right now that are unsigned that they could go get. But I think that they did so much in free agency that I think their kind of outlook towards the draft probably shifted and changed quite a bit when they got the guys that they got with free agency.
I don't think the idea of a draft, though, is that you're not looking for starters.
In the future, yes, but I don't think for this season.
I think that they like Lassiter in their scheme. I think there's a reason they didn't trade up there. And to say that the Texans never go get their guy, the Texans made the most aggressive trade potentially in NFL history for a non-quarterback last year, and I didn't like it. Like, I like bravado, I like boldness, I like courage, but to say that the Texans, and they did that last year. Mm-hmm. Nick Caserio trades up all the time. Like, Nick Caserio has traded up for Will Anderson again, I think the boldest trade-up in NFL draft history for a non-quarterback. Will Anderson, he nailed the evaluation on Will Anderson, so it made the, you know, what you sent and the overspend on what you sent fine because Will Anderson's a really good football player and they nailed the assessment on Anderson. But he traded up for Tank Dell. He traded up for Nico Collins. He traded up for Garrett Wallow. Like, he trades up all the time. He traded up for Kalen Bullock. He traded up for John Mechie. Like, he goes and gets his guys a lot. Now, his evaluation of what he wants on his football team might not be the same as Travis's. Like, Travis, well, why didn't they go get the stud Kool-Aid McKinstry? Well, maybe Nick Caserio thinks the stud's Kamari Lassiter.
Mm-hmm. I think he told us in that clip we played earlier, like he viewed them as in blocks, he viewed them in tiers. And look, we can disagree with this assessment, that's certainly fair, but I don't think he viewed Cooper DeJean and Kool-Aid as much better or any better than the guy he got with Kamari Lassiter. And going back quickly to that Breece Hall comment that the caller started off with at the top, I don't think the Texans are in a spot to trade up for a running back in the 2022 draft. Their roster wasn't there yet. Agreed. And if they did want a running back, Ken Walker went back like five picks later. So clearly they didn't even really want running back in the second round. But even if they did, I mean, that roster they had going to the 2022 draft, you're really willing to give up picks to get a running back? They needed somebody.
But I think he was
saying
Stan Pat with the second pick of the second round.
Yeah, they could, and it actually wasn't even the second pick of the second round. It was a little bit further down. But so the caller was a little bit off there, but not a big deal. But yeah, Ken Walker was there out of Michigan State that the Seahawks ended up drafting. If they really wanted a running back, Ken Walker's been great, and he was there. They could have taken him, but I don't think it'd been worth taking with the roster they had, how many holes they had in going into that 2022 draft, to give up extra picks to go get a running back.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Nick Caserio does not sit on his hands. You can be critical of Nick Caserio, like not knowing what windows are whenever he's talked about windows in the past. You can say that sometimes he overspins to trade up. But to say that he lacks aggression would be wrong. Like, he is super aggro, maybe the most aggressive general manager in the NFL, especially on draft day. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. What is your question for the Killer Bees? Our mailbag Monday. You can ask us whatever you want. 713-780-3776. What is your question for the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5?
Mail call!
It's a mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
Man, y'all leave Cal alone. He's just happy to be here. Listening to Cal speak is so annoying. The most simpleton billionaire ever. That's kind of what's endearing about him, though, is that he's a simpleton billionaire. One of us.
He's an everyman.
Cal McNair, is your refrigerator running?
He's an everyman.
You better go get it.
If you're an everyman whose dad made billions and gave it to you.
Yeah. Tommy Boy. 713-780-ESPN.
Watched it the other night again. I love that movie.
It's a good movie. 713-780-3776. What's your question for the Killer Bees? Mailbag Monday. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Earl the Pearl. What's your question for the Killer Bees?
Yeah, why are the wide receivers causing issues at a club? You know, getting shot like Tank Dell and Plaxico Burress, and, you know, receivers are causing trouble. And one thing McNair does have going for him is his hot wife, Hannah. I'll hang up and listen.
I just wanted that to go on to see how bad it was going to get.
Way to go, Earl.
He called him Tank Durham?
I think he said Tank Dell, but I mean.
He said Durham.
Know all the facts, Earl, before you go and generalize and throw Tank into a category and then make him a bad apple and then want him off the team when, you start to see some of the details come out. You start to see, you know, a lot of the facts. I think it's probably best to get all that before you go and make statements like that.
Yeah, Plaxico Burress isn't a good example. Plaxico... Did he have a legal firearm? I don't know if he was. I thought it was illegal.
I don't think it can be legal in New York.
Okay, I didn't know that. I'm not familiar with their
state
laws.
Shot himself in the foot, right?
It was in the thigh.
Yeah.
He had the waistband of his sweatpants, and it went off.
Yeah, Tank didn't have a gun on him. Tank was shot by an innocent bystander he was an innocent bystander of a 16-year-old at a club. Yep. What is a 16-year-old doing at a club? Like,
that was the first part of the headline that was confusing to me. But yeah, when you read, as Joel pointed out, when you read more of the details of the story, it wasn't Tank that was involved in the fight. No. It wasn't his group that was involved in a fight. They just happened to be in the area where someone started firing shots. You can't blame Tank for that.
No, absolutely not. Now, I don't understand why there's a 16-year-old at a club. There's a lawsuit waiting to happen there.
And they said it was a VIP event. I don't know if it was completely invite-only or not.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like a private party, I think.
Yeah, it was a private party that he was invited to. I mean, you're going to tell him not to live his life. He was invited to a private party. And if Greg Bailey had tweeted out just an hour or so ago, and they're going to have more on their news this afternoon, but that Tank was just at the wrong place at the wrong time in between. I don't know if there was multiple shooters, but at least the 16-year-old with at least the one gun. And he said he's going to have more details coming out. But the picture that's being painted right now with the facts is that it doesn't look like he had anything to do with it. It was unfortunate.
Waka wants to know who can read better, Cal or Jamal Charles. We're not reading that, man.
I mean, Jamal Charles, Waka. Took him.
Jamal Charles also has a learning disability that he's overcome. So.
That's why we're not going to read that. Yeah. Does Cal have a learning disability that he has overcome?
Money.
I don't know. I can't answer that. I'm not privy to that information. And maybe Kerry McNair, instead of trying to figure out what was going on with Janice, should have been trying to figure out what was going on with Cal.
Why his brother is so dull?
Dull, you say.
A buffoon.
Dull, you say.
80-89, what's your take on Saints drafting Spencer Rattler?
Wasted pick.
It's a shot of Fisher and Barrel. I think
Why
he's got
is
talent.
It a wasted pick?
So what was the fourth rounder or fifth rounder?
I don't remember what round
it
was.
Might have been a fifth rounder.
A lot of people say he's got all the tools. It's just a matter of what's going. You know,
I mean, he had that at Oklahoma.
Maturity
fifth
and
fifth round. Fifth round. It's worth a shot.
Okay. I guess I can't call it a wasted pick if it's a fifth rounder. I just don't believe in him at all. I mean, he was once projected to be the overall quarterback in the draft when he was at Oklahoma. Had to transfer to South Carolina and end up as the fifth round pick. I guess it's worth a shot when your quarterback's Derek Carr, and Derek Carr is mid at best. But I don't think he's going to do anything.
But long term, you never know, right? I mean, even if he's just a career backup for you, you found a guy in the fifth round that potentially could be. They say he's got all the tools. They say it's a maturity and a mentality thing.
Yeah, I don't mind it in the fifth round at all. Like, take a shot at a quarterback in the fifth. That's fine. Space City Kev, I got a question for y'all. Brandon, before the draft, you said that when you're drafting a prospect, you can't judge it immediately, and you need to go with your four-year window, seeing what that player becomes. My question is, are you closing the book on Canyon Green too soon? He's only played one season and been injured one season. No, you can't close the book on Kenyon Green. I do believe in that philosophy. Now, you can also form an opinion on where he's at 2 years into those 4 years, and he hasn't shown us anything. Like, even if he's injury-prone, what if he's injury-prone? What if he can never get on the football field?
What if he can't pass block?
So, I'm not closing the book on Kenyon Green. I just don't feel like it's going to be a good book. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that he proves me wrong, and he can be the starting left guard for the next 5 to 7 years, because the Texans could really use that at left guard.
Yeah, and from where they drafted him to where the rest of this team is, there's a lot expected of that position, and hopefully that he can play that position. They're going to give him every opportunity to try and earn that spot for all those reasons. You just hope that, and it's very difficult because he's rehabbing injury, to say that while he was rehabbing injury, was he working on his footwork and being a better pass blocker and doing the things necessary to make less mistakes and be more effective? I hope so. I don't know when you're rehabbing how much he can do.
713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Chris, you're in the Hive. What's your question for the Bees?
All right. Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I know y'all discussed where Nick kind of has his grid, but after the initial free agency you saw, and then what we got in the draft, do you believe that we still should have traded back out of the first, or do you believe we could have got better prospects by staying in the first? And then before I leave, I would just like to say, I don't think Tank Dell should have been at that party, because if a 60-year-old male could get in with a life-threatening weapon, a 60-year-old girl could get in with a life-threatening weapon as well. So that's it.
What weapon is that, Chris? Chris, what weapon? What weapon? What is the weapon you're talking about? I don't know what weapon you're talking about, Chris. Fair point. I forgot about his first question. Oh, have they done enough? Or that trade specifically?
Yeah, would you still do the trade?
I would, too. I think the Texans think higher of Lassiter than any of us think. Well, I've actually thought the highest of Lassiter between the three of us. I think they like Lassiter. And you're getting at least a year of Stephon Diggs when you're trying to win immediately. So
I think that was the main thing.
I'm still okay with it.
I think when you hear what Schefter said about the fact that it wasn't the Vikings calling the Texans trying to get that pick so that they could have collateral to move up to get a quarterback. It was the Texans who really liked Diggs and really wanted him and were trying to finagle some things to make sure that, you know, that they were in the right position financially and otherwise while getting the guy that they want. They like Diggs. They like Lassiter. They got the two guys that they want, and I trust Nick Caserio at this point.
I think Caserio looks at this, as he said, you know, 2 year increments, not 2 year windows, but 2 year increments. And I think he looks at the Texans with the free agent moves that they've made, even before the Diggs trade, that they have a legit shot to make a title run this year. And what's going to help them more, adding a guy like Diggs in that 1 year or adding a rookie cornerback?
And even if we're right about him being a nickel corner, is he an upgrade over Desmond King?
He could be.
Very well could be.
Could be.
Very over well the- could be a lot. Like, they cut Desmond King last year.
Yeah.
Like
he came back and played really well. I'm sure they like him a lot more now, but you're right. Look, and I think this is both long and short term, a guy that they're very high on, that they feel like has a lot of upside and potential, whether he contributes this year or not. And if you look at him and he's not ready yet, you look at the two guys that they brought in, there's still guys out there that if Nick wants to go get another guy or he needs another guy, Xavien Howard's out there. There are guys out there. Stevie Nelson's still out there that you could go get.
Ocho, how many of the Texans receivers would you take over a Donnie Mitchell, a 6'4 receiver who runs a 4.3 40 and doesn't necessarily have to touch the ball to make an impact?
At least you won't let it go.
Ocho.
Definitely three of them.
Let's look at the next 4 years, because Mitchell went in the second. So you're looking, he doesn't have the fifth-year option. So let's look at the next 4 years. I would take Nico over Mitchell. I would take Tank over Mitchell. I would take Diggs over Mitchell over the next 4 years. The problem is I don't know how long the Texans are going to have Diggs.
You think at his age,
yes,
in the next 4 years, he'd still be that?
I think he'll outproduce
AD Mitchell.
I would
take 2 years of Diggs playing really well over whatever Adonai Mitchell gives you over the next four.
I think Diggs is going to put together more volume in the next 2 years than Mitchell will the next four.
Now, I'm out on Adonai Mitchell, but I would take him over, you know, obviously Woods and Mechie, yeah, and Xavier Hutchinson.
I have him fourth.
Yeah, I would have him fourth.
I have him fourth.
I would have him fourth.
What about this Janky brother who's got a really tall vertical?
The 38 is elite.
5038, do you project Lassiter more as a nickel than an outside corner? Yes. And then we all think yes. Thoughts on day three picks not named Stover? I haven't seen much of, is it Jawhar Jordan? I don't know how to pronounce his first name. I haven't seen a whole lot of him. I watched some YouTube videos of him today. He's got some burst. He was behind Isaac Guarnado, however you say the other guy's name. So he didn't get a whole lot of run. So maybe he's a diamond in the rough. He definitely adds speed to their backfield. I think he's got a good chance to make the roster because there's not a whole lot of running backs on this roster. So that one intrigues me. I'm also intrigued by Marcus Harris, the big defensive tackle from Auburn. Like, I think he can fit a niche in the Texans defense enough to make the team. Not be like a star, but to like make the team. Kind of like Heinisch, kind of like Davis did last year.
Yeah, a little
Heinisch under, 2 years ago.
Undersized, I mean, reading on the scouting report, he's undersized. I don't think he profiles as a guy that could become a three-down defensive tackle, but no, maybe as a sub-package guy. And you play a lot of nickel and dime anyway, so you're in sub-package a decent amount. And he had 11.5 sacks last year, so I think it's... I heard Lance say that he had a fifth round grade on him, or somebody came out and said they had a fifth round grade on him. That whose opinion I respect. So I thought it was a worthwhile shot in the seventh round.
Must have been yours.
Honey Glaze Brown, what kind of bet do we have to agree to get Blankers to do an entire show in a Cal McNair voice? That'd be
Look,
fun.
I've tuned it up. You said he doesn't lisp, so
he doesn't.
I took less lisp in the impersonation.
All right, last one today. Blankers, what's your favorite Rockets team of all time?
Hard not to say 95.
Yeah.
I mean, when you take a team that was the only six seed to ever run the table and just all the different storylines and the way that thing came together, it's pretty easy for me to say 95.
If we take a title team out of it,
yeah,
because I feel like that's, I mean, we're all going to say one of the title teams. Like, what would you say of the non-title teams?
It's the team with Barkley that got beat by the Stockton shot in 98.
Yeah, that was 97.
That team...
Wasn't it?
It was either 97 or 98, but that team had a legit... Eddie Johnson was a sniper still on that team.
Yeah, Carl Malone had the bear hug Clyde Drexler.
Yeah, the illegal screen and the Stockton shot. I really... That team was constructed to win a championship with all the veterans that they just... literally were faxing in contracts on the first day of training camp to make official. That team was a good team that could have won it all.
Give me Yael T-Mac.
Yeah,
my
same.
Favorite. I love Yael. Yeah,
That was the only era where I had like ticket packages for. I went to all the playoff games. I loved the T-Mac Yael era.
I loved Yael. Yael was one of my favorite basketball players ever.
Same.
Hakeem's one. Yael might be two. Yeah, might be second. I loved Yao Ming.
Yao's one of those dudes that's a better human than he was a player, and he had the potential to be an even better player. But for all the scrutiny and hype and pressure on that dude, just one of the most down-to-earth, nicest guy you'll ever meet.
My favorite Yao Ming stat is he was drafted the year before LeBron James. So weird to think that way, because it feels like Yao retired a generation ago, and
he was drafted
the year before LeBron James.
How crazy lucky they were just to get that number one overall pick.
Didn't they only have like the eighth best odds or something like
that? It was a low, low number, and I remember no one in the organization was prepared for it because they thought there was no chance in the world, and then everybody's phones were just going nuts going, oh my God, we just got the number one pick.
713-780-ESPN. The Astros reportedly, Ari Alexander had it first. Timing of this Loperfido call-up to me is weird. I'm here for it, though. And how do the Astros deploy J-Lo? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a moment for the good people at X Golf in Katy. If you are a golfer, you know that the dog days of summer are right around the corner. That means triple-digit heat, a ton of humidity, and sometimes it's even too much for you to get on the golf course no matter how much you love the game. That's why you go to the best golf simulators in the Houston area, X Golf Katy. Yeah, X Golf Katy are the only X Golf simulators in the Houston area are in Katy. And the fact is, they're the best. They're the best because the putting is realistic. The chipping is realistic. The simulators track everything, the direction and distance of the ball, the spin rate, and all the things that you need so you can hone in every club in your bag. But more so than that, you can play with the same ball you play with on the course. You can get the feel down of every shot just like you were on a course. And you can do it at night. You can do it when it's raining outside and everybody else's tee time got canceled. And you can do it for fun, too, with your friends. You can play 18 holes on one of 50 courses worldwide. And the fact is, you can play it in about a quarter of the time. You can play in about an hour, hour and 15 minutes because you're not driving to or walking to every shot. You're not waiting for guys to putt out. You're doing it the same way, but taking all of the time-consuming things out of it. And the best thing about X-Golf Katy is it's the best sports bar meeting the best golf simulators. They have great food. They have great beverage. They have all the TVs, and you can go play 18 holes in about an hour or so, and then hang out and watch sports with sports-minded people and have a great time. Check them out today. Go online. Check out X-Golf Katy. I'm telling you, you're going to love it. If you're a golfer, if you go there once, you'll go there a ton of times. And if you love sports bars and the great combo platter that is like some of the other places that you can have fun recreationally with sports and bars, you can check out X-Golf Katy, and it might be your new hangout. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. So, Ari Alexander reported yesterday that the Astros are going to call up Joey Loperfido, a friend of the show. We went out and did a radio show at Constellation Field, and Joey Loperfido heard that we were there, and he came upstairs all on his own, was not escorted by anybody from media relations. He sat down and said, "Hey, Blankers, hey, Branham, can I come on the radio show with you guys?" We said, "Of course, for you, future big leaguer, absolutely you can." And that's exactly how it went down. So the timing of this is weird to me, Blankers, because they said they were going to give Trey Cabbage this like extended look. What happened there? He had one game where he actually did okay. He had the RBI double. He came on defensively yesterday. Like, the whole he's going to get an extended look, I thought, okay, well, maybe J-Lo will get a look in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks. To see this news yesterday after extended look from Trey Cabbage caught me off guard.
Yeah. It caught me a little bit off guard, too, for a variety of reasons. Some of the things you mentioned, also the fact that all of a sudden Abreu gets two hits in a game, and you're like, I'm sure that caught the eye of Dana Brown and company to think, okay, maybe he's snapping out of it. But you're right. Cabbage was an ad for the Mexico trip. But when you come in, then is he going to play at all? But when you put him in the lineup and he immediately delivers, and the fact that you know he has some position versatility, you would think that, hey, you can't do any – we've been talking about this. You can't do much worse than the two guys you've had play first base all season long. So if Cabbage comes in and he's not overmatched by major league pitching and gets a hit right away, an extra base hit at that, you think, hey, this kid's maybe got something we should keep looking at because maybe he just needed a change of scenery, got out of Anaheim, and he might be a kid we can use. Loperfido's a great story, and the fact that, you know, he's got 13 bombs, and I saw someone, I don't know if it was the Space Cowboys themselves, or somebody tweeted out, he's got more professional home runs this year than any player in the country right now. Okay, great. But, you know, he's also got a lot of swing and misses, and he's got strikeouts. But we said if you can improve, I would think that would mean Abreu needs to find some kind of toe to stub or injury to get over to where he spent some time on the IL. I've seen enough to Singleton to know that I don't care if he's out of options. He can go, and you could start with Cabbage and then eventually get to Loperfido, but I would like to see both those guys playing in the major leagues right now to see if they could do any better than what they got. I was a little surprised that they made the move coming back from Mexico.
Yeah, I was too. It caught me off guard. Cabbage has already been reassigned back to Sugar Land, so it really, like, I don't think it's going to be Chaz or Jake Myers. Like, I've seen some people throw out, well, what if it's Jake? I don't see that happening. Jake's your best defensive center fielder. You still need some outfielders, even though Dubon's playing out there. I really don't see Jake or Chaz being the surprise guy that's sent down. So I think it's down to three players. Really, I think it's down to two.
I think it's two as well.
I think it's down to two. I would just bite the bullet and DFA Jose Abreu, but it ain't my money. So that leaves you down to two if we don't think it's Abreu. You have John Singleton, mm-hmm. who, if you're keeping him around, you're carrying three first basemen. I know Loperfido can play the outfield, but you're carrying three first basemen, and you have a better left-handed bat in Loperfido that you're calling up than Singleton. And then the second one's Greg Kessinger, who many people, well, Kessinger has 15 plate appearances. He's easy to sacrifice. Problem there is, what if Dubon's starting for Jeremy Pena or Jose Altuve or Alex Bregman to give one of those guys a rest, and they haven't been rested a whole lot because they've been struggling? Now you look at your bench, and you're not going to have an infielder other than the guy that you're resting.
Right.
I don't think a spot is going to be too keen on the idea of sending Kessinger down, even though he's been used very little. I think it's going to be John Singleton. I think they'll DFA John Singleton, and quite frankly, I think John Singleton ends up back with the Astros, because I don't think John Singleton's going to be claimed, and if John Singleton, you know, still wants to play baseball, I think he's going to be like, well, yeah, just let me go to Sugar Land where I had success. You know, his family probably lives here, right, because he's been with Sugar Land. He's been with Houston for the last year or so. I actually think John Singleton doesn't even leave the organization, even though he's out of options.
Yeah, I could see that easily happening. I think you're right. I think they live here. I know the wife's been very vocal on Twitter, and they've been talking about, you know, just trying to get settled in. They were trying to get settled in here before the season started. I think that John Singleton's the easiest one because you know who he is. He's made the rounds around Major League Baseball. When the Astros signed him, they got him because Milwaukee had seen enough of him, tried him at the Major League level, didn't think he had it, let him go, and they were able to scoop him back up to try and see if they could find something left in him and see if there was anything that he could add to this team. I think that he's a guy, but either guy to me is expendable because I think that as much as, yes, Dubon is in the rotation to start regularly in the outfield, I mean, you have a guy in Loperfido that can play center field. He can play the outfield as well as first base, too. So if you want to, you know, if Loperfido needs to try and get some reps in center field because of the fact that, you know, you're going to use Dubon in the infield, so be it. I think that Loperfido, though he played some first base, when we talked to him, he kind of highlighted where he had played first base throughout his career. I think he probably still needs more polishing, and so does Dubon. So, I mean, maybe that means that, you know, Abreu is going to split time and he's going to be your main defensive first baseman. But I would be great, fine with, I've seen enough of Greg Kessinger to believe that he's not a Major League Baseball player to me. He's a 4A, 3A player. I don't see that they need him. And they could use Dubon in that utility role. He can bounce around if you need to.
He's starting in center field a lot of times. So if he's starting in center field, you're going to have a bench without any infielders. And yeah, you're carrying a third first baseman.
But if he's starting and he's resting somebody, then you got at least someone off the bench that if you need to have bring them into the game, you can. The complete lack of production at first base and how long we've already had to sit there and deal with all this. I'd like to see both guys on the roster at sooner rather than later to see if both guys can do better than the two guys that you have. But in the meantime, if you're going to start working on just getting Dubon and Loperfido reps at first base so that if one of them continues to hit and shows that they're not a liability at first base, they could take over the job, at least in the short term.
I don't think Dubon's an option at first. I think that he would have been getting reps there before they called up Loperfido, in my opinion.
So even if that's the case, then Dubon's fine, still doing what he's been doing, spelling guys in the infield when he needs to, playing the outfield more regularly. Loperfido can play first base. And whoever you option out to me is no skin off my back.
713-780-ESPN. Who are you sending down? What is the plan for Joey Loperfido? How do you deploy him if you're Joe Espada? And also, I have a comp. And would you take this comp for the career of Joey Loperfido? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.